What are the sources and origins of writings like the Book of Mormon, the Quran, and the Gospel of Thomas, and how do they compare to the Bible? The Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for August is One Word, Many Writings, a study of the origins of religious writings. You can read an excerpt at issuesetc.org, or you can find out more about One Word, Many Writings by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. One Word, Many Writings by Dr. Adam Francisco.
Almighty God, Father of the whole human family, we thank you and ask your blessing as we gather for this uniquely American moment.
The Supreme Court has said that it's cruel and unusual punishment to give the death penalty to a rapist. And I don't think that an innocent child conceived in rape deserves the death penalty either.
We so often downplay this as if it's something unimportant to have word and sacrament in the church. As if receiving this gospel is sort of just something we do here. No, it is who we are.
Homeschool families love issues, etc. We have issues.
Now that we've all had a little bit of time to reflect upon it, that gaffe from Todd Akin about abortion and rape, he's had time to reflect and respond and retract. What was his real mistake? And last night, another political figure, Paul Ryan, was speaking at the Republican National Convention, caused quite a stir, lots of reaction there. I wonder how his fellow Catholic and Catholic voters react to that. Joining us here in the first half hour of Issues, Etc. on this Thursday afternoon, August the 30th, Colleen Carroll Campbell will get her reaction to both of those issues. She's written recently about both. Dr. David Menton will join us after that to respond to an anti-creationism video featuring Bill Nye, the science guy. Colleen Carroll Campbell is a regular guest. She's host of a radio and television program called Faith and Culture. She's author of the book The New Faithful, and she writes a biweekly column for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Colleen, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Hi, Todd.
Now that we've had some time to reflect upon Todd Akin, aspiring senator for Missouri, and his gaffe over a couple weekends ago on, I think the term was legitimate rape, what was his real mistake with time to kind of think it over?
Well, you know, what it was not, I think, at first, so we should clarify, it was not defending unborn human life in all circumstances. That's my personal position, and I think it's a very principled one that many pro-lifers have, and that is the idea that one human rights violation, rape, doesn't justify another, abortion. And you don't traumatize a woman twice by subjecting her to abortion after she's subjected to rape, nor does a child deserve the death penalty for his father's crimes. So I think on that point, Akin was fine. It's not a popular position. But it's a principled one and a defensible one. His problem, I think, was that he tried to blunt the effect of that position. He tried to sort of soften the blow of it by floating this baseless theory that a woman is highly unlikely to become pregnant as a result of rape. And really what he should have said is, you know, one human rights violation doesn't justify another, period. And don't try to go back and say, and also this never happened, so we don't need to worry about it anyway. And I think that was his real mistake. And then obviously using terms like legitimate rape, not helpful whatsoever, offensive to many women who've suffered sexual assaults. And this whole idea that a woman can't become pregnant as a result of rape or is highly unlikely to, I mean, there just isn't mainstream medical opinion supporting that. And it's irrelevant to the question of whether or not abortion is a viable solution to the problem of rape. And the answer is it's not. And he should have just stuck to that and not ventured off into the rest of this nonsense.
So also with time to reflect, what does the reaction and coverage of the Akin gaffe tell you about the way the media approaches this issue?
Well, you know, obviously this was an atrocious blunder, and I think it was offensive to many people, including many pro-lifers, and Akin needed to apologize for it. I don't think it's illegitimate to even question whether he you know, should have stayed on the ticket, given how much this hurt him and his party. However, this idea that this is the most pressing question right now in this election, which is the idea that you would get from much of the media coverage, which has just been wall-to-wall since he made this comment a week or so ago. It's ridiculous. I mean, we're talking about it, and I'm quoting now the Guttmacher Institute, which is a research organization founded by Planned Parenthood. So this is not a pro-life outfit. They had a 2005 study looking at the reasons women have abortions. 1%. 1% of all 1.2 million plus abortions in the United States every year are attributed to rape. Less than 0.5% are attributed to incest. So while these are obviously traumatic circumstances for the women who endure them, the idea that, you know, we're looking at this 1.5% of all abortions in America, and this is what we need to focus on, this question of whether or not there will be an exemption for rape or incest, it's just silly. It's not on the table. It's not anywhere close to being on the table. It took us almost a decade to pass a law against partial birth abortion, where we're talking about jamming a scissors into the neck of a child who's coming through the birth canal so you can suck out her brains and she can be delivered dead. We couldn't even get that through Congress until we spent 8 years fighting for it. And even on that ban, folks like Barack Obama still voted against it, seeing it as too restrictive of abortion rights. So I don't think the idea that Aiken's lack of exceptions for rape or incest is somehow a pressing concern makes any sense. And I think we can see that, you know, when you see these kinds of gaffes on the other side, we don't tend to hear a lot about them. I mean, just a week before this, Vice President Joe Biden, you know, adopted an odd dialect for his own accent and said they're going to put y'all back in chains when talking to a largely African-American audience about the prospect of Mitt Romney being elected. I mean, it's a racially tinged remark. It was patronizing and it was offensive. And, you know, everyone just sort of shrugged it off. That's Biden being Biden, moving on. And then Aiken makes, again, an atrocious blunder, and it deserved press coverage. But the kind of coverage these sorts of things get versus the coverage we see of blunders on the other side, especially on the abortion question, I think revealed some serious media bias. And nowhere is this more apparent, of course, than in the votes that Barack Obama cast as an Illinois senator over and over and over again to block a ban on infanticide, which is essentially what the Born Alive Infants Protection Act is on the federal and state levels. And when he was in the Illinois legislature, he would not support this ban, this act, which would have simply required doctors to deliver life-saving care to infants who survive botched abortions. We're talking about a very small number, but still an important principle that if an infant somehow survives abortion and is outside the womb and is laying there in need of medical care, that infant will get that care, because now we are no longer talking abortion. If we kill that child, we're talking infanticide. And Barack Obama could not accept that, and he voted again and again to kill that bill. And, you know, we don't see coverage of that anywhere. So if we've got a sitting president who's basically on board with what many folks have rightly called infanticide, I think maybe we need to be talking more about that and a little less about a somewhat obscure congressman making a blunder in a taped interview with a local television station.
One more question on that subject, and then I've got another series of questions for you. The Democratic convention is coming up, and you state that the Democratic Party's abortion rights zealotry has grown more extreme every year. What do you mean by that, and what do you expect to hear about abortion or abortion rights at the Democratic National Convention?
Well, next week's Democratic National Convention has been dubbed Abortion Palooza by a lot of folks looking at the lineup, and rightly so. I mean, we're talking about headlining speakers, including NARAL President Nancy Keenan, the contraceptive mandate champion Sandra Fluke, and remember that contraceptive mandate also includes coverage for abortion-inducing drugs, and Planned Parenthood President Cecil Richards, whose own organization has faced questions about enabling statutory rape based on stings that were operated by Live Action and Life Dynamics, finding Planned Parenthood kind of winking at cases of statutory rape when young women were coming in for abortions. So, I mean, this is the kind of crop of speakers that the Democratic Convention is putting out there, you know, in headlining spots, saying, you know, this is who represents us. It's pretty surprising. And I think we need to look back just to the 90s when President Bill Clinton famously said abortion should be safe, legal, and rare. That was in the party's platform. But back in 2008, the party stripped out the word rare It's a Democratic Party operatives decided they could no longer abide by saying that they want abortion to be rare. So now just safe and legal is what's left in there. And, of course, in 08, they nominated Obama, who, as I've mentioned, could not bring himself to support a partial birth abortion ban. He could not this spring bring himself to support a ban on sex-selective abortions, which, by and large, target young girls, unborn girls, simply because they are girls. And he voted three times in the Illinois legislature to kill his state's version of the anti-infanticide law. So, I mean, we're talking some serious zealotry here, and the party is pretty open right now about making abortion an overriding issue in this campaign, which I think could be a mistake. If you look at the Gallup poll released in May, it found that the number of Americans identifying themselves as pro-choice are at a record low. We've got 41% of Americans today using that label for themselves and 50% calling themselves pro-life. And those numbers continue to move in that direction, where Democrats, increasingly not Republicans, are the outliers on abortion and the extremists. And Claire McCaskill, who is running against Todd Akin, she doesn't have the same blunders he's got, but she's got a record that has earned her a perfect score from NARAL Pro-Choice America and Planned Parenthood. If you look at her funding, a great deal of it's coming from out-of-state abortion-centric PACs, groups like Emily's List, which exists solely for the purpose of getting women who are abortion rights crusaders into Congress. So, you know, when we want to talk extremism, the Democratic Party really should be dodging this issue, because the Democratic Party is the one that needs to explain its own abortion extremism.
Colleen Carol Campbell is our guest. She's host of a radio and television program called Faith and Culture, and she writes a biweekly column for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. When we come back, we'll change subjects to Paul Ryan and the Catholic vote. He spoke last night at the Republican National Convention. He was very well received, and he concluded his remarks with a rather soft allusion to both his and Romney's support for traditional marriage and for defending life. We'll hear from him and what Colleen has to say right after this. You can listen to Issues Etc. live and on demand with the new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. You can get these apps at our website, issuesetc.org. Give us a call, send us an email, or follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Issues Etc. in the palm of your hand. The new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. Download today at issuesetc.org.
There's an app for that.
I'm not a Christian, but I listen to your show because actually you do have some interesting topics.
Here's a recent comment from the Issues Etc. comment line.
You believe that there's not one error in the Bible. That's intellectually infantile. You also believe that Jesus is coming again. You promote extremely sexually repressive views.
The Issues Etc. comment line. Available 24/7. 618-223-8382.
Have fun waiting for Jesus to return. Got news for you. He ain't coming back.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
The Church's Music from the 20th Century. The 17th Century. The 11th Century. The 8th century. The 4th century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
The man who will accept your nomination tomorrow is prayerful and faithful and honorable. Not only a defender of marriage, he offers an example of marriage at its best. Our faiths come together in the same moral creed. We believe each one of us was made for a reason, bearing the image and likeness of the Lord of life. The truest measure of any society is how it treats those who cannot defend or care for themselves. Each of these moral ideas is essential to democratic government. They are the moral creed of our country, as powerful in our time as on the day of America's founding.
That's Paul Ryan last night at the Republican National Convention making his speech and at the end making an allusion to both support for marriage and for defending helpless life. Colleen Carroll Campbell is our guest. Colleen, what did you make of Ryan's speech last night at the Republican National Convention?
Well, I think he did a good job. He's obviously injected a lot of enthusiasm for the ticket and into the party. He's a young face of the party, and I think he speaks to young voters saying, you know, this is our future and our children's future we're talking about, and our future that Barack Obama and his party are mortgaging, and as they run up these deficits, this is a moral issue too, and we need to talk about it. And of course, he put in a pretty strong plug for the pro-life cause and the pro-marriage cause, and made it very clear where he stands on that and where Mitt Romney stands. So, I think he did what he needed to do, and I think his addition to the ticket has really stirred the pot in a positive way. And it's challenging Catholics to think about what does it mean to be a Catholic candidate who's standing with the church on social teaching, because now we've got Joe Biden who supports basically no restrictions, no meaningful restrictions on abortion whatsoever, and is an outspoken proponent of same-sex marriage. And now we have Paul Ryan, who's staunchly pro-life, doesn't make exceptions even in the case of rape, although is much more articulate about his reasons for it than Todd Akin, is a defender of marriage, but has also become known as a champion of fiscal prudence and careful management and stewardship of the taxpayers' money, which he says is a moral issue, and he says is all about shoring up the safety net precisely because he needs to protect it for those who need it most, and that concern grows out of his Catholic faith and his understanding of Catholic social teaching. So he's really challenging a lot of Catholics to rethink their lockstep following of the Democratic Party agenda on social teaching and on social justice. And I think it's a healthy debate that the church needs to have.
So you're talking there about what you call in your recent column the Catholic left. You say that in a lot of ways Paul Ryan is a source of bewilderment to them. Describe that if you would.
Well, what Ryan does is not simply make his arguments for fiscal prudence and for reducing government spending, which are important and are increasingly popular today as people are getting sick of watching politicians run up the deficit. Ryan takes it a step further, and I think wisely so, and he makes a moral argument. And indeed, when he's asked to, he makes a Christian and even Catholic argument for his policies. He talks, as I said, the idea that, yes, we need a social safety net, but if we spend money recklessly on any and every government program, that net isn't even going to be there for the people who need it most. He talks about how his Catholic faith calls him not simply to sort of dole out government money to any and every program he can think of, but to be responsible with that money. And he also talks about the dual principles of subsidiarity and solidarity, which are kind of the twin pillars of Catholic social teaching. We know that solidarity emphasizes concern for the common good and the idea of defending the weak and vulnerable, and that's very important. But what Paul Ryan has also brought attention to is the Catholic principle of subsidiarity, which says the group closest to the problem should be the one given the most latitude to solve it, and that government should never step in and do for citizens what they can and must do for themselves. So when you put those two principles together, Paul Ryan argues, you get a different picture of what government responsibilities are than when you only look at solidarity and skip over subsidiarity. And that has produced what he argues is this all-encroaching, all-encompassing welfare state that's actually taking power out of the hands of the people and out of the hands of the church, as we see these religious liberty concerns, and giving government too much power and too much say over our lives in every way. So he's got a powerful argument there, and he does He makes his argument in moral terms. He can make it in articulate Catholic terms, as he did recently when speaking at Georgetown University. And he's really challenging the Catholic left to think hard about this idea that the perpetual growth of the welfare state is necessarily mandated by Catholic teaching. And, you know, all you have to do is look at encyclicals like John Paul's Centesium Miss Honest, which he wrote back in the 90s, and talked a lot about the concern that he had with the idea that government would be all-encompassing and would have all the power and sort of absorb the private charitable sector and the power of religion. So this idea that Catholics must vote for an ever-expanding welfare state simply because they are Catholic, it's wrong, and Paul Ryan is rightly challenging it. You don't have to agree with everything Ryan says or all of his proposals, and there's plenty of room for debate on these issues. But he's getting the debate going, and I think that's healthy.
Contrast the two running mates, then. Both Catholic men, and in the case of Joe Biden, kind of the typical Catholic national ticket that we have seen. And in the case of Paul Ryan, the very first Roman Catholic pro-life national ticket candidate, in terms of what you call a false equivalence.
Well, a lot of folks are trying to say that because some U.S. bishops criticized Ryan's budget plans and were concerned about how they would impact the poor, and that was criticism that they certainly made as a conference. It was a letter written by only two bishops, but it was sent by the bishops' conference. But that means that Ryan is just as out of step with his church as Biden is in his support for abortion on demand and same-sex marriage. That's where Biden stands on those issues. But I think it's important to note that Catholic doctrine has never held that positions on prudential questions on how we should manage the economy or what's the best way to help the poor are somehow on the same plane as firm and clear moral questions about whether or not human life should be protected. Innocent human life should always be protected. I mean, as the Church teaches on questions like abortion, that is something that's always and everywhere wrong. Doesn't matter the circumstances, and it must be opposed by Catholics in both public and private life. Whereas a question like how do you balance the budget and do so in a way that's both compassionate toward the poor and responsible for future generations, that's a prudential question. And we've seen over and over the Pope, the last two popes, make this very clear. The U.S. bishops have made this clear again and again in their documents. They even went so far in 1998 to write a document that said, as important as it is to defend the poor and to make budgets that are compassionate toward the poor, one must always defend the right to life of the innocent and unborn, and that's fundamental to all of other rights. And if you're right on other issues, but you're wrong on that one, that doesn't give you a pass. And Cardinal Dolan just recently, in a letter to Paul Ryan, a public letter, said the same. He said, I want to watch how your budget affects the poor, but you, as a Catholic legislator, have some prudential room here. And on issues of abortion and the definition of marriage, the Catholic Church does not extend that latitude. It sees those issues as too fundamental for any Catholic in public life to be openly dissenting from the Church's position on those issues and still consider himself a faithful Catholic. So by that definition, it's fairly clear that Joe Biden is not in step with the Church. And Paul Ryan, whether you agree with his budget proposals or not, is upholding the most basic and the most sort of fundamental non-negotiable teachings of the Church in the areas where the Catholic Church has said you cannot deviate on these questions and still consider yourself a faithful Catholic.
With only about a minute and a half here, Colleen, Paul Ryan concluded his speech last night to the Republican National Convention talking about a clear choice. In your thinking, what is that clear choice that faces voters, Roman Catholic and non-Roman Catholic voters?
Well, obviously, in the areas of the economy and fiscal prudence, the choice is fairly obvious that right now the current president is not showing much prudence, and spending is pretty much out of control. I think that's hard to argue with. The economy is off the rails. And, as to whether or not Romney and Ryan would fix that, I think there's a pretty good argument that they would. But on a more fundamental level for Catholics, especially those who consider the right to life a preeminent concern when they go to the polls, and the definition of marriage, and remember, these are the issues the Church tells them should be their preeminent concern, the choice is very clear. You have a ticket that is pro-life. and pro-marriage, marriage being the union of a man and a woman. And you have another ticket that in which both folks on the top of the ticket have supported abortion in virtually all circumstances, rejected any sort of limits on it, and are pushing now for same-sex marriage, and are waging a pretty fierce assault on religious liberty through this contraceptive and abortifacient mandate that the Obama administration is pushing. So on the issues that the Catholic Church tells believers are fundamental moral issues, not just matters of opinion or prudential judgment, I think it's pretty clear that Obama is not friendly to the Church's position on these issues, and the Romney-Ryan ticket does present a very clear choice, and I think it's a good thing we have that choice.
Colleen Carroll Campbell is host of a radio and television program called Faith and Culture, author of the book The New Faithful. She writes a biweekly column for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, and you'll find her columns at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Thank you very much, Colleen.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
When we come back on this Thursday afternoon, the 30th of August, Dr. David Menten of Answers in Genesis is going to join us. We're going to get his reaction to an anti-creationism video featuring Bill Nye, the science guy. You may have seen it. Near the end of that video, Bill Nye says that he believes that the creationist worldview is destined for extinction in a couple centuries. It's simply unworkable and unrealistic, he says. We'll find out more of what Bill Nye had to say and get Dr. Menten's reaction right after this.
Would you like to share something you've heard on Issues Etc. via email, Facebook, Twitter, or text message? We've made it easy for you. Just go to the Listen on Demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, and click Share This. You'll find almost 50 ways to share Issues Etc. audio. We love our on-demand listeners. Old Theology, New Technology, issuesetc.org. Go to the Listen on Demand page and click Share This.
Hi, this is Jonathan Collin from France.
Thanks to God's gift of the Internet, people are listening to Issues Etc. around the world.
First, I would like to say thank you very much for your program. It very much ministers to those of us who are outside the comforts and the luxuries of having a confessional Lutheran congregation nearby. Thank you very much for this great resource.
Listen to what you want, when you want, wherever you are. IssuesETC.org.
The 500th anniversary of the Lutheran Reformation is fast approaching. We have such a rich history as Lutherans, and many people don't realize that. The CLCC offers a seminar called Your Reformation Walk that teaches that rich heritage and helps you appreciate it. The CLCC also offers other seminars designed to help laity learn to appreciate what Lutherans believe, teach, and confess. So invite us to your church. Visit theclcc.org and get details on scheduling a seminar for your church today.
Grace, God's favor because of what Christ has done for you. This is precisely the gift that you will receive at Grace Evangelical Lutheran Church in Strasburg, Illinois. God's grace delivered by the means appointed by our Lord Himself, His word proclaimed and His sacraments rightly administered. Come and receive. Grace, it's not just what we believe, it's who we are. Grace Evangelical Lutheran Church in Strasburg, Illinois. Grace alone.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Moral values and electability.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
Political pundits would have us think that this year's election is only about the economy. Even some conservatives argue that voters must choose between economic and social issues in order to defeat the current incumbent. But this is a false dichotomy. Consider abortion, dubbed a social issue. We can hardly separate this out from the economic plight our country's facing. There are over 50 million missing Americans due to abortion. These were babies who would have become producers, consumers, inventors, and taxpayers. In addition to the moral toll on our society, the economic costs are great.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.